Because this week's parsha also is Parsha's Parah, as those two esteemed individuals pointed out to me, right? That it's Parsha's Parah, which is one of the four parashias, the special parashias that we have during the year. So the source of it is it's a Gemara, it's a Mishnah in Megillah of the four parashias. What are the four parashias? Shkolim, Zohar, Parah, and Achodesh. And I'll go through all of them. And this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch, Tofresh Pehei. The Arba Parashas, the four parashas, the four special parashas, which lead up to Pesach. Mm-hmm. And we've already gone through two of them. We had Shkolim a few weeks ago, and then 2 weeks ago, we had Zohar. Last week, we didn't have a special portion, and tomorrow is Parah. The point being is that the four special parashas are sometimes spread over six Shabbosim. So there are breaks. So the Shulchan Aruch says that the Shabbos, the third Shabbos you break, you don't have a special parasha, which would be last week, which was last week's Shabbos. And then the next Shabbos, on the fourth Shabbos, which is tomorrow, two Sifri Torah brought out. B'yachod kara parasha sa shavua, the first parasha, you read the parasha of the shavua, the week. U'b'sheni kara parasha's para, the second portion, you read parasha's para. What is parasha's para, though? Parasha's para is the beginning of parasha's chukas, which is all about the paraduma, the red heifer, the purification of those who came into contact with a corpse, and they've contracted corpse tumah, corpse impurity, so they require purification. And it's a very elaborate procedure of the purification of the person with the ashes of the red heifer is being sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day of his purification period. It was a very elaborate process. We don't have this today, obviously, but this was a very, very important procedure that a person needed in order to be able to bring korbanos to come to the Beis HaMikdash. And this was especially necessary before Pesach, because everyone's coming to the Beis HaMikdash on Pesach with the Korban Pesach. You can't come and bring the Korban Pesach if you're ritually impure by contact with the corpse. So it was a very, very important thing. It was a critical thing to have this purification before Pesach. And therefore, to commemorate that, we read that portion about the purification with the paraduma on a Shabbos before Pesach, right? And that's what we're going to be doing tomorrow. But as I said, you can have weeks, you can have Shabbosim where there are breaks, because again, I'm looking at my calendar over here. You know, four Shabbosim over six Shabbosim, there's going to be breaks. So the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, says in a very, very interesting statement. It says, Ein mafsikin bein para lechodesh. One of the rules of these breaks between the parashas is you're not supposed to have a break of an empty Shabbos between parashas para and parashas achodesh. In other words, tomorrow is parashas para, so every single year you can never have it organized. You can't organize it such that there's going to be a break of a Shabbos between tomorrow's parasha and then next week, Parshas Achodesh. They always have to be back-to-back to each other. They have to be consecutive. That's the rule. So other parashas can have breaks between them. But Parah tomorrow and Achodesh next week always have to be back-to-back, juxtaposed to each other. And then the Gemara continues and says, Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said that the siman, an indication, a mnemonic, or if you will, an indication of the fact that there cannot be any break between Parshas Parah and Parshas Achodesh. And just to explain, Parshas Achodesh is about Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Nisan leading into Pesach. But as a way to remember that there cannot be any break between Parshas Parah and Parshas Achodesh, the Gemara says, here's the way to remember. Bein Akosas Halalu Im Ratz Lishtos Yishta, Ben Ashlish Liravi Lo Yishta, right? Makes sense? I'll translate it, right? Between these cups of wine, you can drink, but between the third cup of wine and the fourth cup of wine, you may not drink. Now, what wine are we talking about? Pesach. What do we do? Pesach, the Pesach Seder. Four cups of wine, right? The four cups of wine. And the rule is, the halacha is, between the second cup and the third cup, you can for sure drink, because they sandwich the meal. The second cup is at the end of the Haggadah, and the third cup is drunk with benching. So between that is the meal, is the Suda, so you can certainly drink between the second cup and the third cup. You're even allowed to technically drink between the first cup and the second cup. If you have to drink some water, you have in mind, there's certain halachas, you just have to make sure to have in mind you're going to drink more. But you're allowed to drink between the first cup and the second cup and between the second cup and the third cup. You can't drink after the fourth cup. That's the last thing you eat at you drink at the Seder, like the afikomen and the fourth cup. You can't drink, but in terms of between cups, you can drink between the first and second and third, but you're not allowed to drink between the third and the fourth. Right? Well, we'll get to it. That's what we're going to spend the next 20 minutes discussing. Right? Between the third and fourth cup, you can't drink. Right? So after the Seder's over, after you've benched, that's the third cup, and then you do the halal, the rest of the halal afterwards, and then the fourth cup is the very, very, very end. And then between in that section, you can't drink tea and coffee. The truth is, after the fourth cup, you're allowed to, you can drink coffee afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. You can drink water after the fourth cup. No, you can't. Can you? I've forgotten now. If a person, I think you're allowed to drink after the fourth cup. I think it'll be like a hot water or something after the fourth cup. I think so. Right. But suddenly between the third and fourth cup, you're not allowed to drink anything. Right. That's the rule. So that is your mnemonic. That's the way now. So now you know the base. Now you know, and that's a way to remember that there's no break between the third parsha and the fourth parsha. You know, it's probably harder to remember, that's what the Gemara says. Between the third and fourth cup, you can't drink, and therefore between the third and fourth parsha, there's no break. And obviously, the question is, what's all this about, right? And is it just simply a siman, just simply a memory device that the rabbis are providing? So Ritzadik HaKohen, the very famous Pritzadik commentary, Hasidic commentary, says, he has a whole page over here, and explaining that this is not just a simple way to remember. There's something very, very deep behind it, and there's a fundamental connection between the four cups of wine and the four parshas, the Arba parshas we're going through. There's a fundamental intrinsic connection relationship between these four parshas and the four cups of wine. So what is that connection? So first of all, what are the four cups of wine about? The Seder. So basic explanation is that the four cups of wine commemorate the four expressions of redemption. It says in the Pasuk, in Parshas Ve'era, that Hashem said to the Jewish people, V'hutzesi, V'hetzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lekachti, that I'll take you out of Mitzrayim. This is the promise, I'll take you out. V'hetzalti, I will save you from the grips and the torture and the menacing of the Egyptians. V'ga'alti, and I'll redeem you. V'lekachti, and I'll take you to me as a nation. They're the four expressions of Gula. And when we are taking the four cups of wine, we're essentially picking them up, like making a toast to express our gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for these four expressions of Geula, the four cups of wine. And he says that the four parashas correspond to this as well. So in a certain sense, not in a certain sense, in a very real sense, the four cups of wine are an expression of our process of going through ourselves a sense of redemption and a sense of separation from Mitzrayim, a separation from all of the Yetzirah. And in the same way that the four cups of wine are a internal process of separation and redemption, going through the four steps of redemption, four steps of the four expressions of redemption, traveling through these 4 weeks beforehand, the four parashiyas are akin to that idea as well. So really, the proper thoughts to be having, as he's going to explain, as we go through these parashiyos, so we're already parasha number 3 tomorrow, so we've kind of missed maybe the first two, but we'll go back and we can still catch up a little bit. But the process of going through these four parashiyos and reading them and learning them and meditating upon them is really akin to the same process, the internal psychological spiritual process of the redemption of the four cups of wine. So what are those four things? And actually more than that, because another thing which he says over here, what are you separating yourself from? I mean, we're separating ourselves from something which is negative. We're separating ourselves from the Yetzirah. So what are the three primary forces of Yetzirah which the Mishnah speaks about? The classic formula, the classic trio of terrible, manifestations of the Yetzirah: Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. Motzinas Adam and Olam. This is the Mishnah Perkei Avos, that jealousy, passion and lust, and the pursuit of honor and ego are the three factors which take a person out of this world. And that's a very famous Mishnah, a very, very important idea to always be reminded of, that the three most insidious, destructive forces and traits that a person can have is kina, taiva, and kavod, jealousy of others, taiva, which is the pursuit of passion and lust and physical desire and gratification, and kavod, and the drive and the craving to be elevated, to feel important, to feel special, and to feel special. And many times what happens when that happens is, as I raise my own ego, and Hashem's honor becomes diminished, right? It's a fight between me and Hashem. And that's really, this is the deeper dimension of the pursuit of honor, because it's you're struggling with Hashem. He is the one who has to be elevated. My ego has to be suppressed, right? Two kings can't wear the same crown. Two kings can't wear the same crown. So if I'm wearing the crown, then Hashem's not wearing the crown. And if Hashem's wearing the crown, so that I'm not wearing the crown, now I'm a humble person, right? But that's covered. We'll get to it. We'll get to each of these things. So if these are the negative forces which are dominating us and influencing us and controlling us and take mutzinas adam and olam, they're taking us out of this world, not out of the physical world. They're removing us from our spiritual connection to Hashem. These are the three forces which ruin our spiritual identity. We have to get away from that. The process of redemption, the process of geula, and the process of going through the Arba Parshias, these four portions, and the process of drinking the four cups of wine, meditating upon the four expressions of redemption, is a process of moving away from kina, taiva, and kavod. Now, when you look at the four expressions of redemption, it says, Hutseisi, I'll take you out. Hitzalti, I'll save you. Ga'alti, I'll redeem you. V'lekachti, I'll take you. It's interesting. The third one, fourth one is not an expression of going away, but it's actually an expression of coming to. Right? I'm going to save you from the Mitzrayim. I'm going to take you out of the Mitzrayim. I'm going to redeem you from Mitzrayim. And then I'm going to take you to me as my own nation. So the last one actually is the reverse. It's not going, but it's the conclusion of the whole thing. So therefore, the first three expressions, they correspond to Taiva, Kina, and Kavod. They correspond to the jealousy, the passion, and the Kavod, because we're trying to get away from that. So as we're getting away from that, we are going through that process of leaving Mitzrayim, of being saved from Mitzrayim, of being redeemed from Mitzrayim, corresponding to the departure from Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. Mm. And the four parashiyos, or the first three parashiyos, are all exactly corresponding to that. How so? Actually, before that, just one more point on this, that he says that, you know, corresponding to the three, you know, Yetzaharas of Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, there's also, the Torah speaks about three categories of impurity. There are three categories of impurity which the Torah describes. There's the impurity of tsaras, of leprosy impurity, which is a class unto itself. There's a classification called ziva, zav impurity. It's described in the Torah, ziva impurity. And the third one is tumas meis, is defilement with the corpse. So these are three distinct categories of impurity.
What's the second one?
The second one is ziva. Now I'll explain each one separately, right? That these are three, and each one, without getting into the details of it, each one has ramifications in the times of the Beis Hamikdash and the Mishkan, who had to be cast out of the camps. So there's less intensive impurity, more intensive impurity. The most intensive impurity, obviously, is tumas meis, is contact with the corpse. But there's different halachas about about being cast out, or how far out you have to be cast out. When I say cast out, separated from the camp in order to go through your purity process before you're allowed to come back in again. But the three different levels of impurity. The first one is tsaras, is leprosy. So the tzaddik says that tsaras, leprosy, corresponds to the first sin of kina, of jealousy. Now, why is that? Because this is well known that it says that tsaras is that when we get to those portions of Tazria and Metzora, we talk about how tsaras is associated with Lashon Hara, and jealousy and anger. It's really as a result, the rabbis say, of a distortion and an imbalance of midos, of attributes within. Sakina, jealousy, is seen to be one of the big factors, which, you know, you're jealous, and therefore you speak Lashon Hara, you get angry, you get upset with people. So jealousy is a root cause, which brings about the impurity of tzaras. So that's the first one. So we're trying to get, going through this whole journey, we are getting out of, we're trying to remove ourselves and get rid of any jealousy in our lives. But that corresponds to the first portion, right? Because again, we're trying to map everything together. So what's the first portion? Parsha Shkalim. Right, Parsha Shkalim was a few weeks ago, and Shkalim was read before Purim. Before Rosh Chodesh Adam? So what is Shkalim? Parsha Shkalim is about the Machtzis Hashat, the half shekel which the Jewish people donated. So there's a Medrash which says, and that when you really trace back all of these different things back to their origins, the Medrash says that one of the earliest roots of the entire Parsha, of the half shekel donation that the Jewish people had to give. They were obligated to give it for good reasons, to donate to the base of Mikdash for the Mishkan. But it had its roots. It had its roots. What does it have its roots in? It has its roots in the sale of Yosef. When Yosef was sold, the Medrash says, Hashem said, Atam Mechatam, B'na Shel Rachel, you sold, speaking to the other tribes, mm-hmm. the brothers, you sold the son of Rachel. And why did they sell him? They were jealous of him. They were jealous of him. They had jealousy because he was favored by Yaakov. Because you sold the son of Rachel for 20 kesef, therefore, in the future, the Jewish people are going to have to make a kapara, make an atonement for this, by everyone giving a half a shekel. And the sale of Yosef was a result of the jealousy they had for his brother, for Yosef. So you see that jealousy was the earliest roots of the entire mitzvah of the half shekel a donation, Machtzis Shekel, and we read the parish of Shkalim. Shkalim is about the parish, is about the Machtzis Shekel, about the half shekel. So that parasha is read, that's the first one. And he writes, he says, that the purpose of that first parasha, Shkalim, is to meditate and to contemplate jealousy. Not to be jealous, but to get rid of our jealousy, to think about the fact, why are we reading parasha Shkalim? Why are we learning about the half shekel? Oh, goes back to that Medrash. Oh yeah, Yosef was sold. His brothers were jealous of him. They sold him out of jealousy. And that's why we're bringing the Machtzis. That's one of the reasons we're bringing the Machtzis Shekel, the half shekel. Jealousy. Oh, jealousy, jealousy, jealousy. Oy, what a destructive force jealousy is it. So we missed it a few weeks ago. We can do it right now also, right? We can think about how harmful jealousy is in our lives and how it ruins society, ruins relationships. So that's the first one, jealousy. And again, when we fast forward to the Pesach Seder, trying to keep these things in mind, the first cup of wine will also correspond to that a little bit. It's the first step of departure. It's the first step of extricating ourselves from the forces of negativity. Get rid of jealousy, diminish jealousy, reduce it, banish it from your life. That's the first one. That's the first parasha. The second parasha is Zohar, which we read 2 weeks ago. That's the second one. So if everything works out nicely, right, the second sin or the second Yetzirah, you got Kina, what's the next one? Ta'ava, which is desire and lust, physical gratification and pursuit of desire and lust. That's the second one, which brings with it a much more insidious type of, stronger type of impurity, which is the impurity of Ziva impurity. So again, Ziva impurity is not something which people are familiar with today. It's a type of emission. It's a type of bodily emission, which renders a person spiritually impure, ritually impure, and it requires its type of purification, which the Torah describes. There are parashas about it. We're not going to go into it. But another kind of related type of impurity like that is keri, is emissions, like seminal emission, these kind of bodily emissions, which all are as a result of overindulgence in physical passion. That's the concept, that's the idea. So Parsha Zohar, what are we remembering on Parsha Zohar? We're remembering Amalek. Well, we're trying to eradicate a memory of Amalek. We're trying to eradicate his memory. And what does the Pasuk say about Amalek? Ashekarucha b'derech. He happened on you away. We discussed this a few weeks ago. He happened upon you on the way. And one of the basic definitions of that expression, Ashekarucha b'derech, carry, which is ritual, a mikra laila, it's called a seminal emission, emission, physical emission, bodily emission associated with lust and physical desire. That's what Amalek was symbolic of. Amalek is the source of desire being injected and then being impregnated into the hearts and minds of the Jewish people. We're getting rid of that. So Amalek represents physical indulgence and desire. And Parshas Zohar is to extricate us from that second level of desire, right? The second level of Yetzer Hara. So Zohar is Amalek, which is corresponds to the second desire, which is Taiva. That's the second one. The third one, which is tomorrow, right, is Parshas Parah. So Parshas Parah, now again, going in the sequence over here, we've got Kina, jealousy, that's Shkolim, Taiva, Zohar, just mentioned, and now Kavod, honor. So what's honor? Honor is, you know, again, the ego. Let's examine historically, what did the ego do to the world? What kind of damage did the ego do to the world? What's the earliest manifestation of the preoccupation with kavod and honor and ego, which brought destruction to the world? The very first event.
The uprising against Moses.
Nope.
Cain and Abel.
I mean, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. They ate from the tree of knowledge. Was what the pasuk says. Kim, you want to be like God. You want to be like me. Yeah. They want to eat. They eat from the tree of knowledge. They want to be like me. It's the inability to occupy the same space as Hashem, right? That's covered. And you want to be like me, right? That was the sin of Eve. That was the origin of. It wasn't because they had passion and desire and jealousy where they ate from the Eitz Hadas. It was because you want to feel Eitz Hadas, tree of knowledge. You want to have knowledge and intelligence and mind is the kind of the power of a human being. It's what elevates a person, what gives a person presence and an ego. And that's a challenge. You know, it's your ego against God's ego, and they wanted to be like Hashem. It was a pursuit of covet. So it was the desire for covet. And as a result of that, what was the punishment for eating from the tree of knowledge? Not just that they died, death came into the world. The whole phenomenon of death came into the world. Man would have lived for eternity had they not eaten from the tree of knowledge. The whole experience, we're so used to death, unfortunately, right? Death is a reality of our lives. But that was an innovation. That was a change after they ate from the tree of knowledge. So only after they ate from the tree of knowledge, death came into the world, and then people died. And then when people die, they become ritually impure. So therefore, covet, the distorted pursuit of covet, of ego and glory, brought about death to the world, brings about the worst level of tumas meis, the impurity of the corpse. That's the third. And therefore, tomorrow, Parshas Parah, is a tikkun, is a rectification of that third type of yetzer hara, to meditate on the danger of kavod and how kavod and the pursuit of kavod brings death to the world and brings corpse impurity to the world and makes us ritually impure. So therefore, by reading the parasha Parah, which is all about purification of corpse impurity, so that's the tikkun, that's the reversal of the very cause of what brought about corpse impurity in the first place, because people die. Why did they die? Because of the pursuit of kavod that Adam and Chava had, that they wanted to be like God, and therefore the tikkun tomorrow, and therefore the meditation. As we're learning the parasha tomorrow, and we are thinking about the process of the purification of corpse impurity, to think about humility. Think about how to suppress the ego. And there are many characteristics about the paraduma procedure, which points to humility. For example, the hyssop, which was used to dash upon the person, the water, you know, is described. And the reason why hyssop, it's a very low lying type of plant, and it's low lying because to teach us humility. That's what the Chazal say. It's all that symbolizes humility. I think I may have seen this somewhere that also the ashes. Like burning the ashes is also about humility as well. But the theme of the procedure, at least the moral theme we can gather from the whole ceremony of the paraduma, is humility, humility, humility. Go down, suppress the ego, cast aside the ego, you know, be humble, don't allow ourselves to rise higher. And that's the third parasha, Parshas Parah, and that's the meditation. So we go through these three steps. We go through these three steps of going away from Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. And they're the three steps of the purification of our redemption, corresponding to the first three cups. What's the fourth parasha? The fourth parasha is next week, right? Parshas HaChodesh. Now, Parshas HaChodesh is really, HaChodesh is reading about HaChodesh as Elohim. This is your new month. That's next week's parasha, which is taken from Parshas Bo. So that's it. But again, the point is, that's what we're addressing. There's no separation between tomorrow's parasha and next week's parasha. Parshas HaChodesh is not a tikkun. It's not a rectification, but it's the arrival. It corresponds to the fourth expression of redemption of lekarte, that I'm now going to take you to me. Hischadshus is renewal. Chodesh is being new. Chodesh, you're brand new. So the truth is, when we think about this whole idea from a big picture perspective, it's an incredible gift we're going through, because we're approaching Pesach, and Pesach is the time of absolute renewal of the Jewish people. We are being given an opportunity to go through these four parashas beforehand as a preparation. It's like a preamble and a preview of what the actual Seder is going to be like, because he's explaining that they're traveling through the four parashas is akin, they map to the four cups of wine. And the fourth cup of wine corresponds to the fourth expression of redemption. That I'm now going to, after you've separated yourself from Kina and Taiva and Kavod, I'm now going to take you to be my precious nation. We're going to have a close relationship. Lekarti, I'm now going to be close to you. You're mine. And therefore, the fourth parasha, Parashas HaChodesh, is expressive of that same state of being renewed and brand new. We've already gone through, we've separated ourselves from the Kina, the jealousy, through Parashas Shkolim, from Taiva, through learning about Parashas Zohar, from Kavod tomorrow, right? Keep this in mind. You're suppressing the ego by separating from arrogance, and Kavod tomorrow by meditating on Parashas Parah. We're out. And now we can look forward to next week, brand new. We're rejuvenated. We've reduced all of the presence, these three negative traits inside of us, and now we embrace Parshas HaChodesh. But the halacha is, don't make a separation. There shouldn't be a separation between tomorrow's parsha and next week's parsha. There shouldn't be any separation. Why not? Because it's very simple. Because when you reach an apex, when you reach a zenith and an accomplishment, don't let it go stale. Don't let it become stale. Don't let it go away. Don't let it dissipate. It's like almost like a person is running, like he's training for a 26-mile marathon, and he's training, and he's now running, and he's at the finish line. He's at the finish line, and then his phone rings, or he has to tie shoelaces. So then he stops, he hesitates, and then someone else wins. You know, the worst thing is when you're in that moment of inspiration and you've reached that zenith, that level, don't let it go stale. You know, who in history made a big mistake with this? Again, in the Chumash, who was one of the famous people in the Chumash who made a big mistake in this area, and they reached an apex of great accomplishment, spiritual accomplishment, but then they let it, they made a big mistake and they lost it. The famous story, it's like, doesn't really resonate right away when you think about it. It's Lot's wife. Lot's wife was Sodom, symbolized everything we're talking about, Kina and Taiva and Kavod. That was a place of immorality. And she ran away. She was given the opportunity to run away from Sodom. She ran away. What happened? She turned around. She turned around and became like permanent in salt. Her stagnation became permanent. It's terrible. It's a frightening picture to think about that. So therefore, when we are going through these parashas, don't let there be a break as you're going up, as we're trying to kind of develop these ideas. Don't let there be a break between Parshas Parah and Parshas HaChodesh, whatever. It's a global message in general. I mean, it's a global message in general for all of us, that when you have an inspiration, you have a motivation and an inspiration, you've reached a point. Don't let any time elapse between now acting upon that. It's so important, and so many great things. I don't know if this is, I read a story this morning. I didn't have a chance to really research it thoroughly. What's his name? I wrote it down over here. That's it. Oh, Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla. So verify that. What was it? It was called the Wardenclyffe Tower. right? The wooden clip. He was the he. So this is what I saw online. I was like watching a quick little video about it. But he was the first. He was the inventor who invented wireless technology, wireless communication. The Wardenclyffe Tower apparently is still like a remnant of it is still in Long Island somewhere. But he was on the verge of making revolutionizing technology with wireless technology, and he was given funding by J.P. Morgan. This is how the story goes. And he in the last moment he was still short of money, but he got distracted with other projects, and because of that they pulled out their funding, and this whole technology which he had developed went kaput, and he died a pauper. I think that's where Tesla gets his name from. But you know this. But it was just an example of a story where people lose opportunities because they let things go stale, right? That's with Lot's wife, and also you know all of these any personal examples. So I think the message is I don't think the message is this is what really what the Rav Tzadok Cohen says of it. He says that don't let there be any separation. Also, just he points out over here, the pasuk says in the parsha of the Paraduma, it says, Tiharo v'kiddusho, purify him and sanctify him. There was the process of the procedure of the purification is purify him and sanctify him. There's purification, the sanctification. What's the difference between purification and sanctification? Purification is the separation from the negativity, and the sanctification is what happens thereafter automatically. And the pasuk puts those two words together. Purify him and sanctify him. There shouldn't be any separation. There shouldn't be any gap whatsoever. A simon ben shlishi l'revi'i, this simon between the third cup of wine and the fourth cup of wine of not drinking, though not to have any interruption, is a simon also for not having an interruption between parashas, parashas of chodesh, corresponding to that last step, that of the there shouldn't be any separation, no gap between the last step of redemption of geula to lekachti, to being taken to Hashem. Hachodesh neged lekachti, hachodesh, the parashas of chodesh corresponds to me being taken, Hashem taking us as a precious, cherished nation. Hadivrei Torah, which is the Divrei Torah, and the Kedusha, and the holiness, Vehem Ritzufim, and it's juxtaposed directly right after the purification achieved by the three previous parashas, culminating parashas Parah. So the lesson is don't let a moment of action dissipate, do it right away, and therefore no separation between parashas Parah, parashas Chodesh, no separation, no drinking between the third cup of wine and the fourth cup of wine. And therefore, we should, just take this with us. And as we go into the new month, it's an amazing thing because we are being given a preamble, a preview of what we're going to be experiencing during the month of Pesach. Mm. It's a really beautiful gift. It's an amazing thing. I never thought about this before. The meditations to think about these parashiyos and to think about, you know, the internal work of the separation from Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, and to be taken to Hashem, to be Hashem's cherished nation, to be a good Yid. So may we all be Zocha to have a Hischadshus, to experience Parsha. You know, we've got three opportunities. We've got the Parshas HaChodesh next week, right? Then we've got Rosh Chodesh itself, which will be during the week of the following week, right? So you've got Parshas HaChodesh, then we've got Rosh Chodesh in the week thereafter, and then we have the real Hischadshus, the ultimate Hischadshus of Pesach night.